Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Friday Night SmackDown on Fox.
Eric, I thought it was a bit of a weird show tonight with some of the match finishes. I guess I'm recency biased. The Madcap pinning Ray just felt like kind of a weird finish for that match, but I haven't thought through the pros and cons of all the other options yet. But I want to ask for your thoughts on what I think is a good but not great follow-up to Sammy's departure from the Bloodline and Jimmy Uso being missing for weeks and coming back. And something we've been watching for decades, Paul Heyman getting more talking time and having a more instrumental role in the follow-up to Sammy's departure and Jay's disappearance, and now seeming to have shifted his mind games a little bit to poor Jimmy over everything going on with Jay and Jimmy. I don't know if mind games is a word, but I want to explore that with you. Your thoughts on this chapter of the Bloodline and kind of the overall post-Sammy Bloodline, too? Or the post-Sammy breakup storyline of the Bloodline?
Well, they're in kind of a tough spot because they had a three-week build for the Elimination Chamber pay-per-view, and they were coming off a really, really hot angle to close the Royal Rumble. And so in week one, they kind of had to establish that Sammy could get the better of Roman a little bit physically, which they did. Roman got in his licks, but you know, Sammy ultimately sent him packing and got the challenge, I guess, or got to make the challenge, held his own enough. And so this week you didn't have Roman there. So what were you going to do? Well, Paul this week, because Roman wasn't around both on Raw and SmackDown, was sort of pinch hitting for Roman and doing what Paul does very well historically, talk on the microphone. And so we had, you know, they moved the ball, but only incrementally, right? They put chess pieces around the board, kind of a maintenance show or maintenance angle. They explained why Jimmy and Jay need to stay home next week. I think Jimmy would have trouble crossing the border still into Canada, if memory serves correctly, due to his previous arrests.
Don't throw Jay in there either, because people throw Jay in there, but it is Jimmy.
Yeah, I did look that up, not wanting to besmirch someone's reputation unfairly. And so, you know, they needed – so that seemed to be one of their primary motivations was to explain that away. They brought Jay back, but didn't explain before the match why, and sort of barely explained after. You know, he's loyal to his brother, but isn't really sold on the Bloodline yet. So, I mean, I guess that's fine. It's not as many developments as you might expect, but they shot the big angle last week, and they still got to go home show to heat this what's been a hot storyline back up.
Yeah. I am, like I said, I think it's good. The standard for this Bloodline storyline is so high that it's like I'm enjoying it. I think it's largely effective what they're doing, but I'm left not loving it. And with Sammy, I feel like there's been this sort of missing transition from this likable, lovable, endearing, if misguided, Sammy's version of Sami Zayn trying to be Usy enough to earn his place in the Bloodline and having fun. And the fans loved that Sammy. Then he had enough of the Bloodline because they were brutally beating up KO and wanted him to join in, and he thought it was too far. And then, because of the proximity of the Elimination Chamber, it's like we missed like the 2 weeks where Sammy kind of explained himself and talked about having to reconcile his passion for his quest to be in the Bloodline versus taking the Bloodline, taking things too far. And what was the trigger that led to him wanting to be part of a group that's done awful things and been awful to him, to completely turning against them and now going to war with them? And that just hasn't been there. We haven't gotten that moment from Sammy. So it's sort of all implied. And I don't love that. I want Sammy to talk to us, the people who are watching him, and the fans who were cheering him to be part of the Bloodline, and kind of address us and explain why he went through this. And I also worry. I think the focus right now, and you brought it up, is make Sami seem credible against Roman. That's a goal. That's the box that they're trying to check. But you also want Sami to still be likable, not just intense and believable and credible. You want him to be kind of likable. And that the joy is gone, even though the joy was, you know, quote, misguided before. And I don't know that people are going to be as red hot for Sami as I thought, except for the fact that they're going to be in Montreal, and Montreal will forgive him, or will forgive if they agree with my or have the same feelings I have, I guess the way to put it. I think they'll still, you know, pop wildly for him. But I don't know. Something seems to be missing. So what do you think about that aspect of my critique?
The nail on the head, and that they're going to be in Montreal, and so likability will not be a problem for Sami. What Sami had had going in, he had sympathy, he had likability, but he was still kind of a comedy goof, right, in terms of being a physical threat to Roman and his title. He still was comedy Sami to some extent, right? And so what he was missing was you needed to establish his credibility as a physical threat, and that he's not a goof, and that he can win the title and create the suspension of disbelief. And I think their gamble is, hey, Sami will be likable, and he'll be likable on the day that counts, one. And then two, February 18th, Elimination Chamber pay-per-view in Montreal, when Sami doesn't win the title, I suppose it's possible they do a rematch on TV, but I doubt it. I think that's it, right? I think they move straight from Sami losing, and probably Kevin Owens coming to save the day to send the fans home happy when they're mad that Sami didn't win the title. And then you go to the Usos versus Sami and Kevin tag team match, and you have 6 weeks to build that for Mania. So they're probably not as concerned about fleshing Sami out in whole cloth like you would prefer them to do, because they only got 8 more days of Sami as the, you know, sort of the top babyface in their mind, and then they want to do a hard pivot to Cody, which they've already kind of started to try with Raw.
Yeah. I would have been happy with, and I think it would have, if the calendar worked out that way, they'd have been better off with more time to draw out Sami breaking up and challenging Roman. I was willing to experience more of the Sami bloodline storyline, including I think they could have made it work with Sami like a full-fledged member in the group until after WrestleMania, and a more slow burn of Sami starting to come to terms with the idea that you got to be careful what you wish for, and that these people, he wanted something so bad he was willing to grovel and debase himself, and it happened slowly. And sort of slowly and gradually, that he just sort of then had the moment with Kevin Owens or other things where he started to show signs of, over a longer period of time, I don't know if this is actually for me. I got what I wanted. I think it's a mistake. And everything was just so compacted. And so I am left less satisfied as a result of that with this chapter in the story. I understand why they're doing it. That's not my issue. I understand they only have limited time. I'm just saying, here's because of the limited time they have and the choices they've made to go through with it at this timetable, the downside of it is I do feel there's some missing chapters. And Sami being super serious to give him credibility against Roman, sure, I mean, that's important, but I don't think people want this unfamiliar version of Sami Zayn without that speech that I talked about that addresses why they loved him before and they should still love him and not hold it against him, that he's not with the – I don't know. That, yeah, I'm just – like I said, I think they're going to be fine, and there's some good performances going on. I really was hoping for something better a couple weeks after Sammy's turn than we're getting right now. Humorless, super intense Sami. I mean, it's not bad, but it's not what I was hoping for.
The irony is that this particular storyline has been going on for, what, 6 months? So it's not
week to week,
segment to segment, right?
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like you're getting to the climax of the book, and the climax of the book is like 3 pages, and you feel like you skipped a chapter. Like, no, I want 4 chapters of everything that I've been reading for 200, 300 pages. I want another 40, 50 pages of the climax, and we're getting like a three-page climax. That's how this feels. So, yes, they could have timed it differently if they planned ahead and done it. Maybe they would say they did, and I'm not recognizing the clues or all that. But really, Sammy went from, I desperately want to be in the bloodline, to, in a very short span of time, showing signs, not sure this is right, to full-fledged, I don't want any part of this. And now he's challenging Roman and a very different version of Sammy. I guess in a way I'm just sort of not buying it because he hasn't given me that connective tissue of that's who I was, here's who I am now, and this is what changed me. And even though, again, I think it's self-explanatory, I'm not denying that. He it was too much to see Kevin Owens get beat up like that. Kevin Owens planted some seeds in his head, and Sammy eventually realized he didn't want Kevin to be right, but he was. I mean, I get all that's there, but I want that babyface promo from Sammy addressing the fans and the whole journey. And I just think the time is so compacted we didn't get that, and they just jumped ahead a week or two.
So you could have done that if you were going to do that in this three-week build. You could have done that last week when Sammy came out for his promo, right?
Yeah, you could make it work. Yeah,
you could have flicked at it, right? You didn't need to do 10 minutes on that topic, but you could have done a minute, 2 minutes, right? Before
that's
he pivoted,
all I wanted. Yeah,
pivoted to whatever else. I guess the question I would ask is, are you WWE, are you wanting this in part because WWE tends to hit their fans, their audience, over the head with a sledgehammer of what the story is, right? Here's the, almost like, you know, unnecessary exposition in a movie, right? Yeah. This is the thing we are trying to tell you, and this is the important point, right? And they kind of skip that with this thing, or is it because you're used to that, or just is it a storytelling thing that you just
– I think – yeah, no, I get what you're saying because sometimes you're right. It is like, let us explain to you what is self-evident. I am missing that moment of release where Sammy looks at the camera, looks at the fans, and says, thank you for being on my side. I apologize – I don't apologize for the word. Thank you for being on my side, as misguided as that version of me was. I have seen the light. I understand. You have to understand where I came from and why I wanted to be part of that group. And then I got so focused on wanting to be part of it, I was blind or in denial about who they really were. And I found out who they were last week or whenever, you know, however long it would be between this promo and the turn. And when I watch them do this, this, and this, that's when in my head, and I want to know his inner thoughts. Tell me what your inner thoughts are. Don't make me guess. Don't make me infer. Tell me about that. And, you know, that moment that connects with the fans who have been with him on his journey. And instead, just runs and Roman, I want you and I'm going to beat you up. And then, you know, this week, it's just a follow-up on that. So that's what I would like more of on this. I think that would be better, and I would have waited. Like you said, they could have done that last week and then the challenge for the match this week. The problem is the timeline then would not allow them to have the Cody promo that they did Monday in the way that they did it, or Heyman's show opening promo tonight talking about how, you know, it's dual – what was the phrase he used? It was good. Two-pronged threat to Reigns. So, you know, I mean, compromises are made sometimes in storytelling. Edits are made, cuts are made, and all that. But I think those are evident, and I don't think they're inconsequential, but I don't think they're crippling either.
So they still have time to do that because, as we know, the WWE likes to do recap video packages in case you forgot what happened 7 days prior. I think the one at the start of the show this week was 4 whole minutes.
Yeah.
You could almost do and you could do this at the pay-per-view, you could do this in next week's SmackDown. The moment where all of this happened and everything clicked and fell into place for Sammy was right before he turned and hit Roman Reigns with the chair at the Rumble. You could do a freeze frame record scratch. You're probably wondering what I was thinking, and then you could have Sammy do a voiceover, you know, explaining that. There's still time to do that, right, to your point.
Yeah, yeah. I think the emotional crescendo of that moment has passed, but, you know, if you don't say you're sorry to someone who deserves an apology at the time it's deserved, it doesn't mean you should ever do it again. With Sammy, just because he didn't cut the promo in the time frame that I think would have made it work the best doesn't mean that promo can't still benefit the storyline and, you know, the larger kind of bringing the fans along with him and understanding his complete change in demeanor and being with him. And part of it is, I mean, I didn't think he got like a crazy great response tonight. You know, I mean, they were behind him. They were chanting Samuel Heyman. I mean, again, that's why I say this is good, and I think they're going to be fine. It really is just for a storyline that I think has been so well told. This was another week in, you know, in a stretch here of a couple of weeks where I was like, I just something's missing from something that I think was so, you know, spot on for so long otherwise.
Is it possible they're saving that for when Sammy and Kevin Owens reconcile on camera and I don't know, like the SmackDown after Elimination Chamber? Presumably, if Sammy loses and Kevin helps makes the save, you know,
I would
then have a conversation where Sammy explains all that, or.
Yes, and again, that's my point. You can still do it. It's not too late. If they had two extra weeks between the Rumble and Chamber, maybe they would have done it. They made a choice, and it's not without consequence, but it's not without justification. You know, they can justify why they did it and make their case. Maybe they're not even thinking that's important. And like you said, oh, that's unnecessary exposition. I am arguing differently based on my experience viewing it and watching Sammy right now. And feeling like that transition, that connective tissue between who he is now and who he was right before the turn just wasn't there. But I don't want to belabor that point, but that's where I stand. I do want to ask you about Jay and that, because I also thought it was good. I think it's a cliffhanger. But there's still something that I didn't think just was a home run tonight in terms of Jay's return. He comes through the crowd to Jimmy's side to help defend the tag titles against Jimmy, who is rock solid with Roman, and against Sammy, and just wants his brother to be there to defend the tag titles. And they put him against baby faces, so they're supposed to be booed, but you didn't have that just sort of emotional, like the Usos hugging. You're like, I think Jason Paul wrote this in his report, you know, like the fans are like, yay, they're back together again, brothers reunited. Like people, I don't think, were rooting against Jimmy and Jay getting back together. That wasn't a moment meant to elicit boos. But Jay walking away from the bloodline was an honorable act of defiance that was very difficult because his brother did not join him and seemed to be on Roman and Heyman's side. So where Jay is this massive babyface who now has entered the ring and hugged a heel whom he walked away from just to defend the tag titles because they're that important, but he's acting like everything is okay until afterwards when it was hard to understand what he said, but when Jimmy confronted him and said, are we good? And he's like, I don't know. You know, are you with us or not? I don't know. Wasn't mic'd really well, but it extended the cliffhanger. But I guess, again, I felt like there was something not quite told as effectively as it could about what Jay's return meant, which is he's just there to defend the tag titles and buy himself a week to figure things out. And that seems to be the story here. He's figuring things out, and that's why he froze them. But I guess I want characters to act in a very natural way, and I was waiting at some point for Jimmy to go, why the F have you not returned my calls for 2 weeks? You know, we didn't get that. It was just, oh, I'm so relieved to hear all is forgiven. And I think Jimmy naturally would have been like, seriously? Like, you know how you're worried for someone, but then when you find out they weren't hurt, but they were just not calling you or they weren't keeping in touch with you, you go from worried to angry. That's the natural reaction. And when Jay showed up, yes, Jimmy should have been relieved. And then like, where the F have you been? And sort of angry and demanding an answer. And he didn't really get that. And I think Jimmy's character, I would expect that of Jimmy's character more than, oh, are we good? As opposed to, where have you been? And so some of this just didn't ring true to me.
I guess it depends on where they're taking the story. The Jay walking out seemed like it added some to the drama at the time, and part of what made the Royal Rumble post-match angle such a home run for them. Then they had this build, and they had this tag title match that they'd set in motion, and they apparently weren't going to put Solo out there to be the pinch hitter and defend the belts. So we get Jimmy and Jay. They didn't explain until after the match. I mean, I was sitting there scratching my head. Well, he's here, all is forgiven because he's there, and Jimmy's desperate. But I guess they explained it afterward, but I guess not to your satisfaction.
What was the explanation?
Well, Well, they were walking back, and the explanation was as simple as Jimmy was just relieved his brother was there because he'd spent the first 40 minutes of the show leaving him voicemails and filling up his inbox and his voicemail box, and he was just relieved, and then they had the adrenaline of a tag match that they won, right?
Yeah.
So that would be the headcanon if you were filling it in. Yeah. You know, and for Jay, he's... The thing that I got a big chuckle out of, and this is not at all abnormal for WWE, is he's walking in the back and there's a camera with him for no apparent reason. And, you know, but Sammy confronts him. I mean, it wouldn't have probably taken that much to have a reason for a camera there, right?
I would have liked
that. He's walking out with his bags or whatever, right? And the camera's just naturally at the exit. So, you know, some little just fig leaf to cover it to not make it
exactly.
So
exactly.
Look so dopey. However, you know, it did play a whether they explained it or not, it did play a purpose, as you noted at the end. Paul sort of implied, "Hey, you know, when Roman saw what the hell just happened with Jay on TV, but you didn't, right?
Yeah.
You know, watching from home, you can get a different perspective when something is televised, right?" Which I guess was somewhat clever, right? Somewhat of an acknowledgement that Roman, saw what happened because Jay stupidly did that on television.
The downside to that is if you're going to say that Roman saw that, then that means we're acknowledging the camera was there. It's not an invisible camera, and the show is not meant – the characters don't see the camera, like in a drama series. On TV, the characters don't know there's a camera there. Now we're saying, and again, you tie yourself in pretzel. Of course, they should see the cameras are there, but Jay didn't. That's the problem. Jay looked around before he said what he said to Sammy. He like looked around like, oh, I hope no one's watching. And it's like, you're on national television. There's a camera 3 feet from your face. Of course, people are watching. Maybe not in person, but that doesn't matter whether they're right there in person or watching because there's a camera pointed at you with a red light on. You are not doing something that people aren't going to find out about. And I just – that took me out of it. I'm like, okay. So now Heyman is saying the camera was there. It did film Jay, and Roman saw it. And Usos, you guys should realize this next week by staying home and experiencing that. Like, they wouldn't know anyway. But I guess it's, you know, again, mind game message sending by Roman and Heyman. But I it just doesn't have enough logical integrity for me.
Sure, but I don't think WWE has ever cared about the camera being backstage and having a logical reason to cover for it, right? I mean, when Vince was running it for all those years, and that's continued now. It's just
they've been better about it, actually. No, they were really, really bad about it for years and years and years. Yeah. And in NXT, they started to get better when Paul Levesque was in charge, and they just were like, yes, we got cameras everywhere, and everyone's going to acknowledge them. We're not going to – and then – they've been better about it, Eric. That's the thing. That's why it jumped out to me more. It's like I haven't resigned myself to that narrative structure flaw as just something baked in and I'm just going to have to deal with it. It actually is only done, quote, out of convenience or a lack of imagination. And as you said, in this case, it was convenient but also lacking imagination because they could have come up with another explanation for how they were filmed but Jay didn't notice a camera or why the camera was there. And Jay could have noticed to me, Jay gets wrapped up in the moment with Sammy, and he fist bumps him or he says something, and then he looks at glances at the camera with a side eye, and then he looks panicked because he got so wrapped up with Sammy. It's like if you're sitting at a restaurant having a heated argument with somebody, and it gets intense, and then when it's over, you're like, oh my God, I'm at a restaurant. There's people hearing us. Like,
and maybe you slap your wife, and it gets caught on video. Oh, wait, well, sorry.
So. To me, that they could have filmed it that. That to me is believable. That's human nature. Sammy, blah blah blah. I'm wrapped up in this, and I'm talking to you, and you asked me this, and I've been gone for, and I owe you this explanation. He gives it, and then all of a sudden he glances aside. He makes brief eye contact with the camera, like on Modern Family. Like, oh crap, you know, I know we don't look at the camera unless we're doing a formal interview, but that camera's there. I forgot, and I'm worried. That little moment, that little subtlety, that to me covers all the bases of narrative structure.
Sure, they didn't do that. My question after tonight was, are they just kind of forgetting the Jay thing and sweeping it under the rug? Because I guess they have, you know, so he's gone for 2 weeks selling that he's not around, selling a Royal Rumble angle, and then he shows up tonight, and he's still not 100% sure, but he's also not going to be around next week because they're going to be north of the border. And then they've got, then presumably they've got 6 weeks to set up Sammy and Kevin versus the Usos for the tag titles, which would seem, if you jump right to that, then you're not really taking the time to unpack Jay and Roman. You know, is there still room to do that in your mind? You know, they don't need the whole 6 weeks to set up that tag title match.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not saying I'm losing faith, but they might be on a different timeline than I am, or they might be prioritizing certain things over other things because they think in the end they'll be fine. But I don't think tonight's episode was moving on from Jay. It was a huge focus of the show. Is Jay going to show up? Is Jay going to show up? And then he did. And then at the end, there's doubt. He's still kind of on, you know, he's hedging about the bloodline. So we're to believe that he came back out of loyalty to his brother and his desire to retain the tag team titles. But it's like, again, I'll use the arguing couple at a restaurant. If a couple is arguing, but they have a wedding to go to, it's not about them. It's about whoever's getting married. So they show up, they put on smiles, give them a car ride, they act friendly at the wedding, and then they don't talk to each other on the car ride home, and they argue more. Like, so with Jay, it's like, that's kind of what this is. Like, I'm upset with the bloodline, but I got business to take care of with my brother. The tag belts are important. I'm still working through this. So to me, Jay saying to Sammy, and Jimmy for that matter, and he kind of did when he says, well, I think he said, I don't know, when Jimmy said, you know, what side are you on? It was hard to pick up on the mic. And then with Sammy at the end, you know, Sammy could have, you know, said, thank you for being there. You know, are you done? And Jay could have just looked at him and said, Sammy, I got to tell you, I'm working this stuff out right now. I don't know. And, you know, just say what logically is the case, which is Sammy's reaction would be, if you walked out on the line, why'd you show up tonight? He didn't ask that. And then just have Jay give a good answer, which is, yeah, I'm working through it. I didn't want to not be there for my brother, but I'm not sure where I stand. And he didn't say that. And that, I just think, would have been a very logical thing to say. So, again, there's just some connective tissue aspects missing here and characters not saying what I think they naturally would say. And that has not been the case in the storyline until the last few weeks.
It's possible that tonight will be the, you know, the start of the fall of the bloodline, just based on Heyman's promo where he really put over the importance of the belts to Roman's empire. And if they don't have, you know, basically if they don't have the belts, what are they? And so you could see WrestleMania going very poorly for them. They lose the tag titles and they lose both of the men's singles title to Cody. And then, you know, they're in chaos, right? And Roman versus Jay happens then, right? Or Jay versus Solo, whatever direction they're going to take it in after presumably the bloodline falls apart at WrestleMania with the babyfaces finally getting their revenge, which I'm not 100% convinced that'll happen. It seems like that's the way they're going, but it's unclear. But if that's the way they go, you know, Paul Heyman sort of started laying the groundwork for that tonight by putting over the importance of the title belts.
Yeah. All right, well, we're deep into the show here. Good conversation. Let's pause and introduce it formally and then get to some phone calls and talking about other aspects of the show, too. I hope our Pro Wrestling Post Show for Friday, February 10th, 2023. And I'm Wade Keller, the host of the program, the editor, publisher, and founder of the Pro Wrestling Torch Weekly Newsletter and the website pwtorch.com. And I host these Wade Keller Post Shows following Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown each week. And also the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, a more traditional podcast format. Yesterday, Todd Martin, PW Torch VIP analyst, the star of the VIP weekly podcast, The Fix, joined me on the flagship. And we talked about a week of wrestling news and happenings on TV and some MMA talk even. And all that is available on our Blue Feed. So search Wade Keller and subscribe to the free Blue Feed, our regular podcast feed, in addition to this, our Red Label show covering the live wrestling, the three big primary wrestling shows throughout the week. The other voice you hear so far on this show as co-host, the other voice you've heard, is Eric Kroll, a former Pro Wrestling Torch columnist many decades ago, back covering wrestling, contributing to the Torch again, and joining me, usually Eric, on AEW post shows. And here you are, covering the WWE beat. I know the Bloodline storyline has pulled you in a little bit more lately, maybe, or you can talk, tell people about that. Like, where are you as far as the WWE product goes compared to AEW?
Oh, I think AEW is it entertains me far more greatly than it does than WWE does. I'm here for Cody and seeing his storyline and seeing how it plays out. And you know, the Bloodline storyline was, I thought, was kind of overlong and the same for years. And then Sammy got introduced, and he was the catalyst that really took that thing to the next level.
Yeah, the Jay storyline during the pandemic was one of the things that held the show together. And you know, the dynamic with Jay and Roman and showing range and when Jimmy was not around, it was like really important to the show, and it showed Jay's acting chops and his range. And I am hoping we get more of that, even if I think the storyline is flawed or there's just things that I would do differently or things that I just feel like are a little missing. I am eagerly anticipating Jay being a focus in some form or fashion in a story arc that they have planned out between now and WrestleMania, and even maybe a little beyond WrestleMania, having to do with, is he loyal to the Bloodline after struggling with it for a couple of weeks and not returning calls and texts? Is he going to be lured back? Are we going to be in on the fact that he isn't back with them, but Roman and Jimmy are sort of and Heyman are in denial, or is one of them smart to it? The others don't believe it. There's a lot of things that they can do, but Jay's nuanced acting ability is something that I hope gets brought back into the core part of the storytelling. And we don't just get, I need to take a couple weeks to think about it. I like Sammy. I fist bump you. I'm not sure about the Bloodline, but in the end, it's my brother. I'm going to be loyal to them. And we're just like, oh, what a compromise that is. You know, and I don't think people will love that. And I don't think people will hate Jay. I think they'll just be disappointed and a little disheartened. So I hope we get something with a little more nuance than that the next couple months.
Yeah, that would be a better payoff, I suppose, and it would keep things going instead of, you know, abruptly taking away their main storyline for so long now.
Yeah. All right, well, let's give out the phone numbers and the phone number and the email and invite participation in this conversation, and then we'll get to our first phone call as well. So we'll have a roundtable segment, Eric, with Javier Machado, PWD Torch contributor, later in the show. The number to call, if you want to get in line on our phone lines, is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1 on your keypad if you want to be on the show. You can also call that phone number, just listen in if it's easier than streaming it through your Wi-Fi or phone. When you push 1, that's like you want a switchboard, and then we know that you want to be on the show. If you're downloading our show and not listening live, which is what most of you do, consider yourself formally invited to join us live. You can find a link to our live stream that starts about 5 minutes after Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday in my TV reports at pwtorch.com. That's the easiest way to join the live stream. That also includes a phone number and email, so you have a handy reminder of that. You can also go to wadekellerpostshow.com and navigate to the live stream. So multiple options to find us. The email address is wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com, wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. You can send questions and comments and reactions and rants any time of the week, and we'll work them into our flagship or other shows, but especially for the post shows, when you're watching Raw, Dynamite, or SmackDown, that's your chance to be part of the show, even if you don't want to call up or don't listen to the live stream afterwards and you download the show later. You can still be part of the show by email. So when you're watching those shows, use that email. If you're watching on delay, like on DVR or on the West Coast, you can also send emails in later, and we still might get to them on a future show if the comment or question is pertinent to future post shows. All right, so with that business taken care of, let's get to our phone calls. And we will begin with Sean in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Sean, good to hear from you again. How's things going?
Wade, things are going really well. That was an awesome conversation. Like, Wade, that's the one thing about you guys. I love when you go on your, if it's a rant or just a conversation, I love always the beginnings of these shows. I'm almost more pumped than me talking as far as listening to you guys talking about the show. Like, I enjoy that so much.
Almost.
But I wanted to say.
Almost. Sean, you just said, I'm almost more interested in hearing, Wade, what you and your co-host have to say than I am hearing my own voice. Is that what you just said, Sean?
Well, I got to put myself over a little bit. I mean, I can't just totally give you all the credit. I got to myself a little credit. But I will say,
I'm
Eric,
giving you
it
crap.
Is fun
I,
to talk
I know
WWE.
It's exciting to share your
No, I mean, give me – no, wait, it's okay. You can give me as much crap as you want. I will – I'm it's totally fine. But I wanted to say, Eric, it is fun talking WWE with you. I know you obviously enjoy AEW a lot more, and I – you know, I like AEW too. There's things about it I don't like, and I'll, you know, criticize it for or not, you know. But I'm glad to talk to you about WWE, man. How are you, sir?
I am hanging in there. How are you?
Doing well. I guess I wanted to say my piece just real fast about what you guys were talking about, because it's, you know, this is the most pertinent thing on the show. But I'm really, really torn too, Wade. I'm kind of with, as you were talking about it, I've kind of had a lot of the same thoughts. Because I talked, you know, again, Zach was doing the SmackDown preview today, you know, talking about what Sammy would do, whether he would wait till next week to do a big promo, talking about everything that you were saying, and that I'm kind of thinking the same thing. I wish Sammy would talk about those things, all those thoughts that he would have. I want to hear those thoughts from him, and I thought tonight, when he came out and started talking to Paul, and I wanted to say first, what Paul did about, like you said, Eric, about him talking about how much the titles mean to the bloodline, like that was just awesome. I mean, that's what I want about titles. I want to show how much you want the titles and how much they mean in any situation. And that was just really cool by him. But when Sammy came out and did that and started talking, I really thought that was going to be it. And then he just kind of did a bunch of, you know, oh, well, we're by ourselves. They would be attacking me right now. And, I mean, he kind of talked about some of the stuff with the bloodline, like what they might do in a situation. But he didn't talk about himself and why he was in the bloodline, what he thought during it, like during the whole – you know, all that stuff that you brought up. I wish he would have brought that up tonight. And I did feel kind of down after it that he didn't. But at the same time, I agree with Eric. I know they have to make Sammy feel like a challenger to Roman, that he can beat him, but I still like the Sammy that we've seen before this more. I still like that Sammy more, and I wish we could get more of that, and it does feel very rushed. So overall, Wade, I think I'm with you. I would rather, and I'm really curious to hear what Javier talks about later tonight about what, you know, his thoughts on this whole thing, but I'm with you. I wish he would have said more tonight. I think this was the night to do it if you're going to come out there and talk. And he just kind of didn't really do it. And it was kind of, as much as I liked it, it was fine, but it was disappointing in the whole scheme of things, because I think Sammy is more, and I wanted to hear, what did you guys think about the pop tonight? Like, even when Sammy first, you know, was hooded and he took the hood off, I was expecting a bigger pop. I don't think the crowd was really that great tonight. I thought he'd get a bigger pop, and he really didn't. What did you think about that? Was that weird to you guys? Did that seem like a lesser pop than you might have thought?
It did. What did you think, though, Eric?
Yeah. How much of that was that he was wearing a hoodie, and they weren't 100% sure who he was until he got out there? I mean, they did start chanting his name, right? Another thing is, the Mohegan Sun Casino, I think they had it set up to hold 5,000 and sold it out, but it's a building that would normally hold 10,000 minus whatever TV production seats. So the crowd was just not as big as it normally has been. I mean, it's been 8,000 to 10,000 for SmackDown and sometimes Raw for weeks now, because the promotion is so hot. So that it might have just been a sheer size of the building and relative smallness of the crowd in the building.
Yeah, go ahead, Sean.
Yeah. And then what you talked about with Jay, I did feel the same way about Jay. He just kind of came back out of nowhere, didn't say what he's been thinking the whole time. You know, so I'm with you, Wade, on a lot of what you said. I think Jay, there's still something to do with Jay. But I just feel like tonight was kind of just weird. I mean, obviously, you think, okay, in your mind, he's going to come back to defend the tag team titles. But then after that, after they win, you know, like you said, it's kind of like, why is Jimmy not getting on him? Like, well, I'm cool you're back, but, like, what's going on? You know, and they didn't really just do anything. And that was kind of, again, a little disappointing. I think they could have done more with it. And so, you know, I'm still invested, but I'm not as invested as I was, because I do think they've rushed it too fast. But I know they had to. Because, again, Cody wins the Rumble. He's going to fight, you know, assuming Roman at WrestleMania. And it's like, I wish they could have done more with the story. Like, are you kind of feeling the same thing I am regarding that? It's just, the you know, I wish they could have, even though I'm glad Cody's over, and I'm glad that'll be a hot WrestleMania match. There was just Sammy. Sammy could have done so much. He could have either won the Rumble or something, and like, I just wish they could have done a little more. But what do you think about that?
Yeah, so I mean, you're echoing a lot of what Eric and I said in that opening segment, or what I said. I think, I do. The idea of having Sammy win the Rumble or not having Cody win the Rumble, I think is sort of, yes, you can say they could have done that, and they might have been fine, and maybe fans would have bought Sammy as a WrestleMania opponent. Some people strongly disagree. Others would go, of course, he's a better option. Our online poll that we ran sided with Sammy over Cody by a wide margin, but Cody, it wasn't. That was at the peak of Sammy's popularity, and Cody still got like a third of the vote. So it's not like that awful. Maybe it wasn't quite 30, but it wasn't totally awful for Cody. But I just think they were so committed. They want Cody to be in SoFi Stadium. They want him to be – I think they believe Cody over the next 3 years will be a bigger contributor to the main event scene than Sami Zayn. They may be right. They may be wrong.
Yeah.
Cody's a higher draft pick in a way. Sammy's the guy who's been around and been kind of diminished. Cody went away on his journey and came back. There's a different story they're telling with him, and I think they think he's more main event consistently long term. And so I just think they're committed to that. And the Sammy thing is this happy accident that they're trying to fit in at the same time. And then you had Heyman addressing both, talking about the two-pronged attack on the Bloodline. Eric, we talked a lot about everything that came after that. But what do you think about that? Sean brings this up. What do you think about the decision to have a two-pronged attack, to pull the trigger when they did, or and their decision to not have Sammy win the Rumble and save Cody for another time because Sammy had momentum, and then they certainly could have stretched this out more in a good way, at least I think. What do you think?
I think to some extent, it feels to me like WWE is trying to whistle past the graveyard. And they are invested in Cody. They are, as you called Sammy, a happy accident. And they are scared to death of the WWE fans, revolting and turning on Cody because they just want Sammy to win. And so part of me wonders, are they not, is the lack of time an excuse for them to take a little bit of air out of the Sammy balloon, knowing that even no matter how much air they took out of the balloon, they're still going to get a great reaction in Montreal in his hometown. That's going to make for a great television moment. And so it's not for them. It's not the worst thing in the world. They're trying to rehab Cody, but keep Cody over and not have Cody end up where he did at the end of his AEW run with fans booing him through.
Yep.
In the case of WWE, through no fault of his own. And they know they just have to ride out one more week of television, and then they can put Sammy in the rear view and it's full speed ahead on Cody, and Sammy goes to a B program for the tag titles, presumably.
Yeah. All right. Well, Sean, back to you.
Yeah, no, I'm intrigued for sure. I mean, but like I said, there's some things I could have done a little better, but the two main things I wanted to go other than the main storyline was, I'm glad for the Fatal 4-Way they did a little bit of promo time, kind of saying that they want to win and battle Gunther for the title. But like when Madcap did his promo, guys, like I just thought it was so like Madcap is just not good. I mean, as far as promo wise, like in the ring he's okay. I mean, but gosh, that backstage with Emma was just awful, man. I mean, I'm like, I don't buy this guy seriously at all. And I'm like, well, here's what they're going to do. I guarantee you they have two heels with Ray. Ray had already faced them, so Ray's not going to win. Then you have two heels. I think Santos, to me, should have gone over. I just think Santos against Gunther with Imperium, with Legado, with that kind of trio thing, I think they could have done some decent stuff with that. And I think Santos needed somewhat of a win right there, and he didn't get pinned, so I don't think it hurts him that bad in that sense. But Madcap, I just don't buy him as a challenger to all of a sudden just get a win in a Fatal 4-Way when he's done nothing recently to have any kind of chance to – and then he beats Gunther. Or, sorry, he beats Gunther. Well, he will not do that, thank God.
That's right.
But to have a chance to fight Gunther, what did you think about that? I just didn't like any of that really at all.
So, yeah, I wasn't expecting Moss to win, but at the same time, you've got Gunther. What match are you going to give away? You don't want Gunther as a heel against Santos as a heel with Gunther beating Santos. They want to protect Santos more than that. Ray has sort of been there, done that. He's in a different program, and I don't think you want him to get beat up by Gunther next week. So unless there's some storyline reason, you know, with Dominic or something behind it. So, and they don't want to feed Cross as a heel to Gunther as a heel. So Madcap was, in a way, the logical option. It is, quote, just a TV match. This is not, you know, winning the Royal Rumble to headline WrestleMania. It's a way to have one guy in the chaos of a four-way come out ahead and, as a babyface, get a chance to get fed to Gunther. But he's big and strong and sort of, you know, credible, at least appearance-wise, to Gunther. So when Gunther beats him, it's another win against somebody who gained maybe a little credibility winning amidst the chaos of a fatal four-way where there are no rules, which is so dumb. So, I mean, I get it. It's not exciting, but it's a way to feed the TV slot a match that they can bill as being important and big on a week when they actually are putting the biggest stuff on the pay-per-view. Eric, that's my interpretation. How about yours?
Did they say that Madcap Moss gets his title shot next week?
Yeah.
They did. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. I missed the next week thing. I mean, he's just the sacrificial lamb. It's a one-week build. It's a one-off for Gunther. It would have slotted in fine as the one match on the pre-show for Elimination Chamber, right? And then you presumably move on. The one thing I'll say about Madcap Moss, not doing the jokes for a while now, in the ring, I haven't seen anybody run the ropes as fast as he has possibly ever in the entire four decades I've been watching wrestling.
Right.
Mm-hmm. He's incredibly explosive. Now, I don't know that there's much there, right? He's still pretty green and still could use some seasoning, but man, that guy's athletic as all hell, if nothing else, and probably nothing else.
Yeah, I mean, his promos are not great. The Emma thing, they, you know, kind of continue to explore that, you know, that dynamic. But I mean, I think Madcap's on a slow build, and I think Sean there putting him in a position to give Gunther a win and put a TV match on TV and explain why he's getting it. And it was nothing more than that. And it's not the biggest thing that they've done. And I don't have a big problem with it other than I'm watching. I just, for whatever reason, didn't think, like, I wasn't thinking, well, let me use WWE logic to figure out who's going to win this. But still, it felt weird when Moss won and pinning Ray especially. But, you know, again, they're trying to protect Santos and Cross. And so, and Ray, you know, he's popular despite losing. So, in a way, I mean, it kind of, I mean, hindsight's 2020, but I mean, if you sat down and looked at all the options, you'd be like, well, Moss pinning Ray to earn the shot's probably the best option amidst the chaos of a fatal four-way.
Yeah. No, I agree. And it was fine. Like, the promo was just so bad beforehand that I think it hurt me even worse. Like, if it had been a decent promo, I think I would have been like, all right, well, that's cool. But then the promo was just so laughable, and he made such a joke of it. It's just like, I was like, ugh. Can't buy this guy serious, and that's kind of sad because I think he had something after he left Corbin. I was like, oh, maybe there's something there, and then he just kind of went, nah, nowhere. But the two more questions I had, let's just go back to the women's division, was I wanted to hear what you guys thought about the Charlotte, you know, little sit-down with Cole. I thought it was pretty good. I thought she seemed more real, which I'm liking that she's at least trying to be more real. She's not, you know, like you said, speaking in platitudes. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. And it's like, okay. She said, I taught her a lesson 3 years ago, but I want to, you know, whatever she said, I can't remember how she put it, but I liked what she did there. I thought it was pretty good for a little sit down. I mean, I think they're going to do more, obviously, to build up for WrestleMania, but what did you think of kind of the start interview with her, and where do you think they're going with this feud, and do you like that they went to Rhea Charlotte? Because I did. I think they got a good story to tell with them.
Yeah, so I don't think she's super likable, but I don't think she's trying to be panderingly positive and likable. I think Charlotte is carrying herself like the you know, for lack of a better term coming to mind, elder statesman of the women's division, the OG of the women's division. She's the top star. I think she wants to present herself that way. I think there's a desire to present herself that way in contrast to Becky Lynch and anyone else who wants to claim that they are that person. So she wants to carry herself with gravitas. And the tendency with her, because she's been turned hate, face, and heel, or I shouldn't even say that. She hasn't even been turned that much as she's been presented as a face and a heel, somewhat indiscriminately back and forth in a way that my memory cannot recall. I just know the emotional frustration of watching her sometimes show up as a heel and a face without explanation for why we're supposed to then boo or then cheer her. So she's a damaged character, and there's not a real constitution to her at the core other than greatness and destiny. And she's putting a smile on it, and she's the key to her being popular is that she's the same level-headed great performer who lesser heels are coming after out of a desperation to try to achieve what she's worked hard and earned. And I think you can do that. The question – I don't know that she's capable of anything different that wouldn't come across as phony or put on. So that's where they – that's where she is. Eric, what do you think? What do you think about the sit down, and what do you think about Charlotte's character?
Ugh, she's so unlikable. Just such a natural heel. I mean, I guess ostensibly she's positioned as the baby face, right? Against she came back and got a big pop on her return and defeated Ronda, the arrogant Ronda, the only more unlikable top woman that they pushed than Charlotte. Natural heel. Ostensibly Charlotte the face and Rhea the heel, but I wouldn't be surprised if, given how over Charlotte is and how she's got the strength and the gothicness, the gothness and the mommy shtick going on, if Rhea gets cheered and Charlotte booed at WrestleMania or even in the run up to it, I am chuckling because I'm old enough to remember 3 years ago when Triple H, people were up in arms because Charlotte went over Rhea, and Charlotte, never puts anyone over and is always pushed to the moon. And why didn't they put Rhea Ripley over? Well, Triple H did say we had to let it play out. And then of course they didn't go back to it. So now Triple H gets to put his money where – sorry, Paul Levesque gets to put his money where his mouth is and give Rhea the big win at Mania. Will that happen? Question mark.
All right, John, you said you had some other topics?
Yeah, just the last one I was going to ask you about. I was curious – this was kind of just funny to me, but when – I just kind of laughed because they just put the women's tag match out with Sonya and Chelsea. Well, I just laughed because Chelsea just all of a sudden comes on SmackDown. Sonya's just looking at her like, why am I with you? I have no idea why I'm with you. And then Raquel and Liv come out, and I'm like, okay, they were just arguing, and all of a sudden they just love each other. They're patting each other on the butt. They're just smiling at each other. Like, why is this match happening? It was just funny to me. I wasn't, really mad at it. I just wanted to get some semblance of, why this is happening out of nowhere. Two women – the women's division, and that's what I wanted to kind of rant a little bit about the women's division. I just think Levesque needs to do a better job with the women's division. I just think there are so many women that you could do some good things with, but you just don't define them in any good way, and you just put them in these random matches with other people, and it just doesn't mean anything. So I just wanted to see what you guys thought about that. And, Wade, I haven't said it in a while, but, everybody needs to go VIP because, again, I've been – it's almost 6 years now, and it's I tell you all the time, it's the best 6 years I've ever had on listening to – all the stuff you guys put out there. And like I said, now that WrestleMania season's coming up, I'm just super pumped about all that you guys are going to be talking about. And Eric, it's good to talk to you, man. Thank you guys for taking my call, as always.
Thank you, John. Appreciate the kind words. So first of all, I'm enjoying the Chelsea Green character, Eric. I know they're not saying it, and I'm glad they're not that saying she's a Karen. But that's, the inspiration is I'm going to complain to the manager. Let me talk to your superior. An absurd claim of discrimination for something that, Adam Pearce couldn't possibly know she had. And also she probably doesn't have it. She's just not paying attention, or she's, playing dumb. But I think she's playing her role well. And I thought it was, funny saying she has facial amnesia, which is a real thing. I mean, maybe you shouldn't make light of it. Well, but whatever. I thought it was well done. I think her character's been a fun, nagging influence on a fun, hapless middle management, frazzled Adam Pearce, who, just seems desperate to keep his job and pay his mortgage and not let his family down. But he's got this super stressful job and beads of sweat are also always popping out of his head. He's trying to do the right thing, but he doesn't necessarily have management above him on his side or paying enough attention, and he's got too much on his plate and blah, blah, blah. I think he plays that part well. And now you got Chelsea Green just being that last – challenging that last bit of sanity that Pearce has. And Pearce lashing out and, throwing them in a tag match, I thought was – using his power reasonably, but also effectively to say, you know, I'm not going to just sit back and put up with this. So putting Sonya and Chelsea together against Raquel and Liv, you know, it created a backstory for a quick match. Eric, your thoughts on perhaps Chelsea in particular, including her role tonight, Adam Pearce, and then the larger issue Sean made about the women's division, which I think it's better. I think LeBec's been doing is better than Sean framed it, but there are weaknesses and flaws for sure that where there's room for improvement. So yeah, your thoughts.
I think the Raw women's division feels a little better to me than the SmackDown women's division does generally. There's a lot of people kind of wandering without a lot of direction, though they're trying on SmackDown. The women's segments weren't the weakest part of tonight's show. They were not good. Lacey Evans is, you know, there's stop trying to make Lacey happen at this point, I guess, doing the sexy Robert Remus gimmick.
I did not expect that phrase.
Yeah. I did laugh at facial amnesia. I thought that was funny.
Yeah.
But, you know, the Natalya segment with the returning Ronda Rousey, I mean, you could have heard a pin drop, or at least you could have if they weren't artificially sweetening the sound. That was one of the things that, you know, normally I fast forward through a lot of SmackDown, but when you slow it, when you're watching it live, there's just this low hum that's completely unnatural throughout, right? That's designed to have a baseline of crowd noise, and it's really kind of maddening. I guess if you watch it every week live, you can tune it out, but it really stands out. Stood out to me. All the Chelsea Green and Sonya Deville thing, it was just designed to give Raquel and Liv a win before their Elimination Chamber match, right? And that's fine. It always amuses me that Raquel never smiled once on NXT, and that's all she does here when she's not flexing her back muscles, which are impressive. So I wonder, you know, you're looking ahead to Mania. Ronda's back. She's there to build a match. What is that match? Is that match a tag team, women's tag team title match? When I look at that, who are the opponents? Is it Damage Control, a heel versus heel thing? Do they take the belts off Io Sky and Dakota Kai before Mania so that maybe Raquel and Liv could be a new team or find some new babyface team for Ronda and Shayna to beat at Mania?
Yeah. Yeah.
I guess we'll find out over these next 7 weeks.
The crowd reaction for Ronda's return indicates, you know, perhaps small sample size, that she's not the, oh my God, she's here in our present star that she once was somewhat successful at being. And the reaction just to the angle was flat. I don't think people were super excited about Natalya. They were pretty quiet during that segment. And I don't think that she framed herself in a way that I think people were like, they've given her a microphone to talk to us in the middle of the ring. This is different. I'm not sure, you know, I'm invested in this enough to have the patience to sit through it. That's the vibe I got. And that's not that Natalya didn't play her part well, and she's not somebody that you can do something with. It just kind of came out of nowhere. But it was a follow-up on what Shayna did to her and breaking her nose, and I think that's good. That's a big enough angle to deserve a 90-second promo to address and try to advance things. But the crowd reaction to Shotzi coming out to help and Ronda and Shayna getting the best of them, it's just they weren't booing. It just didn't resonate, you know, LeBec is not defining the characters effectively enough to across so many of the women's feuds to elicit the kind of the reaction that an emotional investment in liking someone and disliking someone, rooting for someone or rooting against someone should draw. And we see when it happens, it's magic, men's or women's division, but that's a weakness right now with LeBec. And like you said, Raquel smiling, sort of carry over from Vince and what he did, but the women's division has the disadvantage of not being the centerpiece and treated as a centerpiece. And so there's the top few and then a big drop off. And part of that is there is a big drop off, you know, I mean, the reality is most of the women are not at the same level as the in terms of their star power and how their bond with the fans has been established. And it's kind of a catch-22, self-fulfilling prophecy or whatever, in the sense that because they don't get enough TV time, when they do, they're not as over. They don't get as much storyline time. So when they get an angle, fans aren't as into it. But the fact is there, the talent depth isn't as deep. It's not as large as it is. And we see that with the Royal Rumble every year. We get reminded of it. And so I don't know that they're under pushing anyone, which is kind of a problem, but I think they could be doing a better job with the push they give to a lot of them. And that's just more broadly speaking, instead of being super specific. But I think we saw some of that tonight with the crowd reaction. That's a problem. Yeah. Go ahead, Eric.
I thought that Natalya had crickets for a reaction. I thought Shayna and then Ronda got nowhere near the reaction you would expect, especially Ronda. But then poor Shotzi comes out to make the save, and no one cared. I mean,
exactly,
it was like,
yeah.
It was the worst pop of all of them, and the whole segment was kind of awkward. I guess historically for WWE, it's been, and this is true for all of wrestling, pretty much always, it's the stars on top that draw, and everything else is secondary. If you go back and you watch some of the prime Attitude era shows, the undercard still sucked. And that's just how it's always been. You only got so much creative bandwidth, and you spend it where you spend it. It would be great if everybody was over, but then and they took lots of time to make everybody's segment perfect, but that's just not how it's ever worked.
Yeah, I mean, when I interviewed Vince Russo and Ed Ferrara in L.A. for the Ultimate Insiders DVD, and it was like their first time together since their breakup as the dream writing team or the dynamic duo or whatever they were working with Vince McMahon during that peak era of Raw ratings, you know, they talked in detail about we'd show up, meet with Vince, and he'd be like, what do you got for Steve Austin? What have you got for The Rock? And maybe a couple other people would make their way into the conversation eventually. And the mid and lower card, Vince didn't find important enough to even follow closely. He just had sort of gut reactions to things and expressed it, and that helped steer things. But that's where Russo and Ferrara took pride in, you know, getting to know and working with and making the mid-card and undercard wrestlers feel valuable. But you can't get past the fact that the boss valued the two wrestlers and whatever they were involved with. And it's not, you know, it's not absurd to take that approach if you have, to use that term, limited bandwidth. And if you're Vince McMahon, you do. You do want to focus on making sure that stuff that really matters is polished. And frankly, there's stars of WWE and then there's the supporting cast. But it behooves you as a promoter to get the most out of the supporting cast you can, even if that's building an infrastructure where if you're not paying attention, others are. And I think that's something Levesque's still trying to work through as, you know, head of creative. But, you know, I mean, it's not easy. And, you know, it's like you're trying to make Madcap Moss work. You're trying to make Lacey Evans work. You're trying to figure out how to wedge Shotzi into the show to get her over because you think she's got some talent, but you're introducing Chelsea Green and you're reintroducing this character and you're bringing this character. There's a lot going on. There's only so much TV time. And it's not that that's an excuse to not do a better job, but it's the reality that if you've got certain wrestlers that you think he's dropping the ball on, it's because in his week of creative energy, he is doing what Vince McMahon did during the biggest boom period, which is focusing on the top storylines primarily.
And it's working, that focus on the top storylines.
Yep.
They are doing great business.
Yeah. SmackDown viewership's up. They're selling tickets. They tell us Peacock is doing huge numbers. I believe them, but, you know, I just say they tell us that because there's not, like, some independent entity validating or verifying it. So we're just – they could have viewership go down 20%, and they could just brag – and barring a leak from internally, and they could brag it was the biggest ever, and, you know, there's not a way to independently verify it. But I do believe, given all indices that are verifiable, that things are going great for them, and I expect a massively successful WrestleMania. And they're doing more stadium shows, and they're bringing the show to London, SmackDown, and King of the Money in the Bank. So, yeah, I mean, and their quarterly financial reports are kind of boring for those who aren't receiving all the money, because it's basically just saying, yeah, all those deals we signed – yeah, the checks are clearing. Things are good. That's it. That's the financials now. And of course, who are going to sell to and make trillions of dollars? All right. Anyway, I'm rambling and going off course. Let's get back to phone lines. Our number, if you want to join us mid-show, is 347-215-8558. 347-215-8558 when you call push 1. You can also email us at wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. All right, let's go to Kyle in Baltimore. Kyle, welcome. We were just talking women's division. Thought I'd bring you on. Maybe you have something to say about that. What's on your mind tonight? Welcome.
Well, this time I wasn't going to talk about the women. I was going to talk about Sammy himself and talk about the entire storyline with the, you know, with Sammy, Roman, and Cody. It's all, at this point to me, it's all makes my head confused. Basically, it's all over the place. It's like to me, it's all jumbling together all to one because like it's because it feels like because from and I said before it goes back to Cody's injury. When Cody got injured, Sammy got hot, and we're in this situation now. Now Cody is back. He won the Rumble, but yet we still have this Sammy Zayn story that people are super invested in. Well, he's being around how to get pre in now. And for me personally, I care less about either Roman Reigns, Cody Rhodes, or Sami Zayn. So that's how I personally feel. But it turns out as a story that they've been telling for at least a year. They've been telling this Sami Zayn story for a year that they didn't plan to. What this reminds me of, too, I feel like as well, it's kind of a little bit reminded me of the Becky Lynch situation and Charlotte and Ronda, and people also said it's kind of like the Daniel Bryan thing as well, which, sure. But I think, so what do you think heading into once, because what was the chamber is over with? Because I'm also kind of looking ahead here, which was that was Cody Rhodes and Roman Reigns. What type of situation they're going to really tell there of a story perspective to make fans really interested in seeing Cody Rhodes and Roman Reigns other than just because he came back from AEW, so he's going to win the championship from Roman Reigns just because. That's what it feels like headed into that story in particular, because there really isn't any story between Roman and Cody. It's more story between Roman and Sami. So how is that going to transpire?
So, Eric, you haven't gotten to answer a Kyle question before, I don't think. I want to get your thoughts on what happened with Cody and Heyman on Raw, and answer Kyle's question. What do you agree with this framing of what the Cody storyline is right now? Heyman sort of making fun of it on the promo today, which I wanted to get into when we got sidetracked a little bit about the certain aspects of that show opening promo from Paul. But I mean, do you think they're on a course? We talked so much about Sammy, understandably so, here on the SmackDown post show. Cody wasn't on the show, but it is, they are linked. Is there a hook that you're into or that you think the fans will be into regarding Cody's quest to unseat Reigns?
So we're in this position because of two things. One, Cody got injured in June. Was June the Hell in the Cell match against Seth where he had the big bruise on him?
Sounds about right.
Yeah. And so we haven't gotten to see what they had planned and what they had laid out for Cody. Was Cody going to be the WrestleMania opponent for Roman? I think they were hoping it was going to be The Rock and Cody would win a belt against somebody else, Seth Rollins or somebody, on the other night of Mania, right? But we didn't get The Rock. We also didn't get Cody's, you know, last 9 months to build himself up and tell a Cody story if that was the backup plan for Mania. You didn't get to see Cody. He was gone. He was rehabbing his injury, trying to work real hard and get back. And so you combine those two things, the hoped for Rock thing, Cody's injury robbing us of seeing his story unfold and get over and build for 9 months, with the third element, which is Sammy. So normally the challengers, whoever the challenger is for the WWE title, if they're not looking to change the title before Mania, and they certainly haven't with Roman for years, WWE kind of puts up monthly sacrificial lambs, right? Or Kevin Owens gets 2 months or whatever, or you get Bryan Danielson who's on his way out of the company, or Edge who didn't get over. And so you don't really have anybody you're all that invested in as a fan to challenge Roman or whoever the champion is, right? Because you're saving the big challenge for Mania. And so this time you actually do have somebody that the fans are very much invested in and very much want to see a large segment, would love to see win the title at Elimination Chamber in 8 days. And I really doubt you're going to get that. certainly does not seem to be in the cards. And so what you have is, you know, after 8 days, Sammy's no longer in the, you know, storyline 1A or 1B. He's in a supporting role on the card. And so they will have, I think it's about 6 weeks left, and 6 weeks times two, right? Two shows, right? They can, since they're on opposite brands, they can pull an angle on Raw. They can have angles on SmackDown, right? And what's the story they need to tell? They have a completely blank canvas because there's also almost nothing that's gone on between Roman Reigns and Cody Rhodes, right? Outside of him winning the Rumble and Paul Heyman cutting his promo with Cody on Monday. So they can fill that canvas however they want. I think there's a perception that Cody is actually somebody who could win the title, right? He's an actual threat to Roman. So you can do all manner of bloodline attacking him, right? You could do all sorts of physical angles of injuring Cody. Can Cody even make it to Mania? Is Cody's arm hurt? Is Cody's leg hurt, right? Is he going to be 100% for Mania? You could do that kind of traditional storyline. You can also have them, you know, cut a whole bunch of promos where they're ripping on each other, you know, Rock Cena style from a number of years ago. I mean, the sky's the limit. They can do whatever they want for the next 6 to 7 months. And you saw on Monday, they dipped their toe in it with Cody sort of almost naively saying, all I want to do is win a wrestling title, and everybody's making it personal. Well, yeah, no shit.
Which Heyman made fun of.
Right, of course. Yeah. I mean, it is personal. It's wrestling. It's not tiddlywinks. It's not beanbag. It's for all the marbles. And Roman Reigns has his whole character is based on, you know, being this, you know, this tough guy on the surface, but underneath he needs his friends to help him cheat to win because he's really insecure about, is he the head of the table, right? Why does he always say acknowledge me? Because he needs that reassurance, right? And so he's actually somewhat of a cowardly heel underneath this big, huge, giant bravado that they've built up. And so you could have fun with that, Cody poking fun and poking at Roman's thing. If they just do Cody being a Pollyanna-ish, gee willikers, I just want to win this title for my daddy, you could have some of that. But if it's just that for six, seven weeks, I think on two shows, that's going to get old really fast. You're going to have to raise the stakes and make it personal between the two. What do you think, Wade?
No, I think that's well put, and I am absolutely looking for, the Cody Heyman thing was so good, and Roman interacting with somebody new is going to be really fresh. And you nailed Roman's character, and it's actually been better developed lately than it had been. That Roman isn't supremely confident, and he doesn't think he's the greatest. He purports to be the greatest, but there is an insecurity. And like, the head of the table started as like, hey, I got all this pressure on me. Everyone looks to me for everything. And it was sort of a woe is me, but I'll step up and I'll do it. Almost a martyr type thing. I'm good enough to solve everyone else's problems and still be the best in this business at my chosen craft. And now it's sort of turning into, it's moved, I think, more so into what you described, which is he is petty. He is hypocritical. He is short-tempered. He is, I was going to say like condescending, but he's not really. He's more in a mode of taking out his frustrations on people and then using his power to apologize, and he fully expects complete, utter forgiveness because of his power. But when he snaps, he doesn't admit he's wrong, but he apologizes at the same time, which is kind of weird. Like, there's always sort of a guilt trip baked into some of these apologies. So his character is getting more nuanced and not unraveling, but I think it's getting more insecure, and it's adding what I think Cody can exploit. If Cody talks about some of that stuff, if he gets specific, if that gets worked into the storyline, he can rattle Roman by speaking truth to Roman. We all see it, but nobody's saying it in Roman's circle. And Cody can fluster Reigns by talking about what kind of champion he would be and how he'd conduct himself in contrast to what he's seen with Reigns, and not seem like he's like lecturing Reigns in the world on how a champion should conduct themselves, but just calling out Reigns for almost a strategic way to kind of break down Reigns' state of mind going into the title match by kind of pointing out he's not a particularly respected leader, and that he has to use intimidation, and he loses his temper and loses his way sometimes. And I think you can get Roman rattled, and Cody can kind of be the Roman rattler, the guy who just carries himself with supreme confidence and has a destiny, and he just wants to keep it simple. Like you said Monday, why is this all personal? I just want to prove I'm the best in the ring. And I like when the foundation gets back to let's prove who's the best in the ring. And then a strategy, a smart one from Cody. He can be the high IQ babyface opponent for Roman is exploit Roman's weakness, which is, Eric, you astutely said, is Roman actually needing validation, you know, needing assurances. And Cody can point that out, and I think Roman will be off balance because of it. And I, Kyle, going back to your original question, I think that's where that's an option of where we're going, and I think there's been some clues dropped that might be where we're going. Kyle, what do you think of that? Oh, go ahead, Eric.
You can do a six-man tag and pop a huge rating with Sammy, Kevin Owens, and Cody against Roman and the Usos, or, you know, solo if Jay is still out in the wilderness or whatever. I mean, there are many possibilities you can do to build this up and not have it get old over the course of 12 separate shows. What do you think, Kyle?
Yeah, go ahead, Kyle.
Yeah, I mean, I guess we'll see. It did just recently happen with what happened on Monday, so we'll see what they'll do. But I just have that sense, but we'll see. I don't know. Maybe they'll change my mind of making me interested in with this, but we'll see. But yeah, I'll get to the women now, I guess, I'm very. It's interesting too because Raquel's in the chamber match for the Raw Women's Championship, so I find that interesting too. That came out of nowhere, and well, I guess not nowhere because also because they said for the winners from the chamber, also lives in it too because from the Rumble, the final people in the Rumble in the chamber, which fine, but it's
yeah,
but. I think though too for Charlotte, for example, I'm looking forward to the match itself because I know how good Rhea and Charlotte is, but the thing with Charlotte that I can't really I just don't care for is that it is her character. She is naturally a heel in. Because she's better off as heel than a babyface. That's how Becky's better off as a babyface than a heel. And now for Rhea as a heel, is one of the biggest heels in women's division, the biggest stars beyond Becky in women's division right now, I feel, is I'm intrigued what they're going to really tell in that heading into WrestleMania between them because so far I'm looking forward to them being the same reign together, the same building together to have a face-off because to see what that will look like headed into the match before the match. How do you think that situation heading into their match between Rhea and Charlotte, how that's going to transpire in the coming weeks or so, or months, or whatever it will be?
Yeah, we talked about Charlotte already sort of, you know, critically, but framing this in a sports-like way, and I'll defend Charlotte a little bit. I mean, I agree. She's better off as a heel than a babyface. And, you know, I think it's right to question whether she's in the right role, which is more of a neutral, above it all, successful standard bearer champion than a babyface. But she happens to be not insulting the fans, toning down a little bit the, you know, self-proclamation of being royal and the queen bit and all that, and seeming a little more grounded, a little more human. I have been more of a fan of her work in recent weeks than a handful of other people whose opinions I respect who are not seeing improvement that I am in this, but it is still imperfect. But I will say, just talking about the history of Rhea and Charlotte and what happened 3 years ago, and Charlotte saying, you got to spend more than 3 years to get to my level. I think the Q&A was a little stilted. I don't think that's Cole's strength is scripted responses to what a wrestler says that he tries to make sound like it's just a thought he had that he came up with based on what they said. It seems like he just knew what he was supposed to say. I don't think that's his strength. I think he's a good commentator. No, I think he's a good announcer. But sit-down interviews with scripted lines always sound stilted and scripted to me. So that took away from it. But Charlotte just going, bring it on, Rhea. I'll prove I'm better than you still. I mean, that's fine. And then Rhea's going to be the one who's, you know, trying to be obnoxious and annoying and get boos. Obviously, some people have an affinity for her character in the dynamic with Dominic, but I'm fine with this approach to promoting the match. Charlotte is they're framing Charlotte as a big star, and they should allow their women's champions to portray themselves or be framed as a big star the same way the men are, and not have people think, oh, she's cocky and arrogant. And I think she's toned down the overtly cocky and arrogant aspects of her heel persona. And now she's just an ultra confident, successful top star at the peak of her profession. And I think that's her character right now. And as long as the heels are strong, it's okay. You know, I mean, it's not Becky, you know, I think Becky's a lot more entertaining and likable, but I'm okay with her in that role. Eric, what do you think of what I said and what Kyle said and the direction they're going with Rhea and Charlotte and anything else you want to bring up about that?
So I think it's a little bit earlier, but I think the danger that I see is a sort of reverse psychology problem in the roles, in that if they're going to portray Charlotte as the face, I'm not sure how over she is going to be as a face against Rhea Ripley, who the fans sort of want to cheer because she's cool. And so I think there's a danger that it'll get muddled headed into Mania, and you know, however many people are going to be in attendance, they're going to be cheering Rhea and booing Charlotte, and that is going to cut against the story they're trying to tell and the angles that they've shot. But, you know, you have to let it play out, and they can always tweak things. I think Rhea's got a mixed tag at Elimination Chamber, so I don't think they're probably going to put a lot of focus on that until after February 18th premium live event. So they'll have time to figure that out. As for the Raw Women's title, this Elimination Chamber match is for a shot at Bianca Belair at WrestleMania, so there are actual stakes. And in looking at the entrance, there's only two that I could see winning, Asuka or Raquel Rodriguez, and Raquel would be a babyface.
Come together. Even that seems came out of nowhere, too. Because Bianca has those belts, she's just facing someone on WrestleMania just randomly, just because that's also really weird too. So, how that's going to work?
Yeah, I mean, it certainly wouldn't be the first time WWE has given the winner of an Elimination Chamber match a title shot on the men, mm-hmm. the men or the women. Tried and true booking pattern for them. I mean, I guess out of those two, Asuka's the one I see emerging victorious. She can play heel with her dark makeup character and shade that way and provide a real threat to Belair. So plus the match will probably be pretty good. So I guess it seems like they're making the best out of the cards they have to play there.
Yeah. Yep. Kel, anything else you want to bring up before we move on?
With that too, we'll try to end with this part. I can also see, you know, I also heard that probably Becky will probably get at her or something because like Becky or Bayley going to do it at WrestleMania, if not in a major role of a WrestleMania. You would think there would be some kind of big shot on a WrestleMania with a big time match. So we'll see what those two end up doing at WrestleMania. But in terms of for tonight, we'll just see what happens with the world championship situation. And but that's just it. Thanks for our call.
Cool. Thanks, Al. Appreciate it. We'll get to Javier next. So let's play his jingle to make it official.
Of course you have to play his jingle. He has to get over before he starts appearing.
Yes. Javier Machado, welcome to the show. How's it going? How do you feel about our conversation so far?
Hey, Wade. Hey, Eric. So far, so good. It's been extraordinary.
Nice callback. Nice reference.
So, but yeah, man,
Javier,
I,
are you sure you don't?
Go ahead, Eric. Get your joke.
Javier, are you sure you don't need your jingle played a second time, or was one enough?
Hey, don't diss the jingle, man. I've always been kind to you. Why are you giving me a hard time?
Yeah. God, Eric.
That's a callback of my own. I typically needle Javier for his jingle, being the only jingle jingle guy in, among all of the realm.
Well, I mean, Sean has his, too, so...
Yeah, Sean eventually harassed me enough that he got hit.
We're talking to Sean. Let's go to Tennessee. We're talking to Sean. Talking to Sean. Talking to Sean in Tennessee.
I think I like the Javier one better. It's a little shorter.
It is shorter, but the Sean jingle is catchy. I like it. I'd listen to that. Teach their own, though. Anyway, Javier, let's get to relevant content here.
I think it's been a while since I've talked WWE, because I've been on AEW, but it's been a while for the WWE one. I wanted to break down the Sammy part of the story into two parts, because I think individually the two parts of it, pretty much leading up to the break, to the Royal Rumble moment and then the afterwards, those two parts taken individually, I think they were really good, taken individually. It's when you put the two pieces together where they don't really fit. And I think that's where you feel like they could have used like two more weeks to fill that, to fill that spot, because leading up to the, let's call it the Sami Zayn face turn, he was asked to take out, it was abrupt, but it makes sense because he was asked to take out someone who was his best friend at one point. So, you know, so I could buy that. I mean, granted, you also have to come in with the knowledge that these two, you know, of these two's, you know, past of, as like Kevin Steen, Ellen Erico, and, you know, their entire time in WWE, which I don't think they really, you know, reinforced that enough, you know, prior to that. But it made sense that it was an abrupt change up to that point. But then after that point, which what we saw today, basically it felt like someone who had been studying the family, studying the relationships, and was having issues with stuff that he had been seeing. He calls Roman out as being abusive, and Jay walked out, and is Jim, you know, and then he's already planting the idea that Jimmy, you know, is Jimmy going to follow Jay because Jimmy will have more loyalty to his twin brother than he would for Roman Reigns. He talked about Solo Sikoa, that, you know, at what point did Solo Sikoa get tired of the situation? So it felt like he had already been, you know, planning on it for a long time. So when you put the two of them together, it kind of doesn't make that's where I think that the split is. And, like, individually, like, I mean, like, you know, the conversation he had today was perfect because this is stuff that we've been talking about for months now, since the whole Sami Zayn storyline. You know, they're calling back. I mean, even, guys, it's been a while since I haven't talked. Even as far back as the trial, they're bringing up, like, little segments, like, you know, with Roman – when he bumped Roman, and at that moment we're like, ooh, but they never called back to it until that moment. And we're getting to see now callbacks and stuff being mentioned of the little bits and things, you know, that hints that they've been dropping. But yeah, it does feel like because you did the turn as abruptly as you did, and again, like up to that point, it made sense, assuming that you know their history. But then after that's where it kind of, you know, there's like a gap there, which is, you know, which I think is where the idea of that they might have skipped to like a week or two, you know, comes from. And in terms of like where it goes from there, because I think you mentioned, Wade, you know, what, you know, you want to see Jimmy and his thing with Roman. I don't think we're going to get there because at the end of when Sami Zayn and Jimmy, sorry, not Jimmy, Jay, that Sami Zayn and Jay had their conversation in the trailers. Sami Zayn basically says, you know, in 8 days you're gonna essentially, he says, in 8 days you're gonna have a decision to make. you know, and it says no matter what, you know, just know that I acknowledge you. No matter what happens, this is the last time we talk, I acknowledge you. Sami Zayn is basically saying that, look, I know you're going to have to make a decision between family and, you know, sticking with the bloodline and turning on the bloodline, and no matter what decision you make, just know that I'm there with you, and I understand. So he's already kind of like, you know, so I think it's going to end up being, you know, since Jay is going to be allowed there, I think Jay is going to ultimately have to make the decision and likely going to be the one that costs Sami Zayn the match. And then that's what's going to snowball into a storyline where it's Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens versus the Usos. But I think that in even in that, there's still going to be drama of, like, you know, because that's the thing I liked about the Jay and Jimmy part of it, is that both of them were, like, really true to their characters. Because Jimmy is kind of like a weather vane. No matter, you know, he basically points to the direction the wind is blowing in terms of his emotion. So I think that he'll be fine. Like, if Roman says, you know, kill Sami, he's fine. That, okay, I'll go kill Sami. One day he'll hang out with him, but once the order comes, he'll take care of it. That's Jimmy's personality. But Jay, I think, is going to be the one that's going to be like, okay, you know, I got to do this. And then I think that drama, if it's strong enough, is going to, you know, I think that what WWE is hoping is that drama would keep people invested in that story and not turn it into a, we want to see Sami versus Roman. And I think that's the plan. If you have, like, a situation where, like, Jay betrays Sami at the Elimination Chamber, I think that might be where people might, you know, be more, either one of two things, either Sami getting revenge on Jay or Sami trying to get Jay and Jimmy out of the bloodline. You know, that way, you know, that drama, I think, would people would rather see that than actually see him go after Roman, and then Roman can, you know, go do, you know, deal with Cody.
Eric, what do you think about that? That's a lot on what we talked about earlier, and I think some good points, and I think what jumps out is the message Sami said to Jay, which does seem to be forecasting that there's an angle coming up in his match with Roman. And does Sami lose when Jay chooses to stay with his brother, even if and if that's the case, are we to believe Jay decided that before he came back tonight or after he started communicating with his with the bloodline? Yeah, so talk about that aspect of it and the timing of maybe that's the – as I'm listening to Javier talk, it seems like people are going to be expecting Jay to make a decision that has an influence on the outcome of the match.
Jay will be allowed into Canada, correct? Likely, Jimmy.
That's my thing.
Yeah, and I suppose next week on SmackDown we could get some shots of Jimmy and Jay at home watching the show, right? I suppose that is possible, and they could talk. They certainly laid the groundwork for that if that's what they want to do. To me, the cleaner story to tell is Sami and Kevin versus the Usos at Mania. And Cody and Roman. And so they can interact, but I would think you need Jay to stop being Hamlet sooner rather than later and make his decision.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking about what is so you know, Sami is in the same role Drew is in at Clash at the Castle, right? The crowd really, really wanted Drew to win, but Drew was in, you know, close to his home country, right? Not in his home country, but hundreds of miles away, a lot closer than he normally is, was super over with the fans. And WWE could not, you know, they had plans for Roman, and they weren't going to let him lose there, despite the short-term rush they could have gotten from a pop from a title change. And so Sami's in that role. Now, what did WWE do at Clash at the Castle? They inexplicably had Tyson Fury come in and sing American Pie with. And so what can they do in Montreal, which is even going to be even hotter probably? Well, I don't know. It's a full stadium, but that was an outdoor show. So, you know, they will be as hot and loud as they were for Drew in September. And so what do they do to send the fans home happy? Because they do tend to like doing that, and they just had a heavy heat angle at the end of the Royal Rumble, right? They didn't send the fans home happy there. They send the fans home thinking about, oh, my God, we just saw one of the better angles we're going to see all year. And so that was heat-based. To send the fans home happy in Montreal, you either have Sammy win the belt or you have Sammy get betrayed, lose the belt, maybe probably because he gets betrayed, as Javier points out by Jay. Maybe even a reluctant Jay, right, betrays him, and or they beat the snot out of Sammy after the match to teach him a lesson, like they did to Kevin Owens at the Rumble. And what do you do? Well, there's only one way to send the fans home happy, and that's to have Kevin Owens, also from Montreal, come out and make the save and reform and bond again with Sammy. I suppose you could stretch that out to the following week, and you could end it with a heavy heat angle with Sammy, but then you know, it just seems like that's the way they send the fans home happy. I don't know. That's the best I can come up with, and for, you know, something that works to end Saturday's show, and keeps the booking kind of relatively simple headed to Mania.
Javier, yeah. Anything you want to respond to that Eric said or I said, or anything you want to underline and get more of our thoughts on?
Yeah, no, that was what Eric just said was pretty much the what I was thinking, the direction I was thinking, that Kevin Owens, because that would be the perfect, you know, because particularly how his music goes, that music playing would get a, you know, huge pop if he, you know, particularly if you keep him off of TV until that moment. So I think that would be a good moment, because my only thing is, would I, you know, because I'm questioning whether you include Cody in that moment where, you know, Kevin Owens goes to make the save, but between Jay and Solo, I'm assuming Solo will likely be there, and Roman, it's too much, and then Cody comes in. That way you know, kind of say, okay, now Cody's going to make the save. He's a good guy, because in the Royal Rumble, that was my question. As they were being, you know, killed, my thought was like, hey, you know, Cody's supposed to be the babyface, so why is he not helping Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn from being killed? You know, which I think it was sort of answered when he said, this is just business.
I don't know that I'd put Cody in a position to get booed out of the building in Montreal, because he will be the very symbol of why Sami didn't get the title. And so I might not send him over the border next weekend.
That was my question, yeah. Because, I mean, like, I could see positive negatives to it, you know, because a positive, if it works, you can send them, you know, you can like signpost that this is what's going, you know, you're going to use the love for Sammy, hopefully transfer it to Cody, but you know, it could also backfire. That was always just I was questioning. So I don't know if you take the risk.
Yeah, I mean, that's, again, there's a lot of calculated risks and decisions where you can choose a path and it backfires, but it doesn't mean it was easily recognizable as a mistake as much as the phrase says, a calculated risk. We think we can get away with this. We think we've done the groundwork we need to keep Cody popular and not seen as a rival to Sammy. And that certainly has been what they set out to accomplish this week. You know, I mean, the Heyman Cody segment, and the way even tonight's show went and Heyman talking about Cody, and Cody didn't get booed, you know, Mohegan Sun, it's not Montreal, it's Uncasville, Connecticut. So, you know, I think they think they're making progress, and I do think they are, and I actually like the full-on embrace and acknowledgement of the dual-pronged attempt to take down the bloodline, and I thought that Sammy, in his demeanor and his determination to and Reigns' title reign. And I it's hard to live up to what Heyman and Cody did Monday. But that hug, in that, like, there's certain symbolism that I think, and body language that I think is working well right now. And I think that there is a lot to work with here where I think fans can be satisfied with the idea that Sammy, we're going to root for him to take him down. We kind of know he's not going to, and we know we're going somewhere else. In a meta sense, in a, you know, fans who look at it that way, they know that. But fans who aren't thinking that way, and you know what? It's not people listening to the show, but there's a lot of them out there. They're just hoping Sammy takes him down so that you get Sammy versus Cody, and they'll worry about that later. But Sammy showed the pulling Heyman in for that hug, but doing so in kind of a forceful way, not an affectionate way, and saying, tell Roman he doesn't worry about Cody because I'm going to be the one to take him down. Sammy's got to say that. He has to put himself out there as the alpha challenger, not it's a foregone conclusion, I'm going to come up short. Even if it's not going to work and people won't think that, you have to tell that story. So as long as WWE's telling that story, people I don't think will resent Cody because the story is presenting Sammy as a credible challenger. They're letting Sammy, in a meta sense, say, I'm going to beat you, Roman. They're not treating him as some obvious guy who's going to lose and it's just a personal grudge. And I think that will help Cody, especially, and I think they're confident, they know what the finish is going to be at Elimination Chamber. So I think they're confident that what they do will not put heat on Cody. Putting Cody in the middle of it is fraught with danger, though, Javier.
Yeah. And I like you brought up the hug part because that moment also gave you the moment to pause and ask, what if? You know?
Mm-hmm.
Probably not, but what if? You know, that was truly an alpha moment. I think you might have said that, but I really dug that too. So overall, I really enjoyed it, and also bring up the Jimmy not asking Jay where were you? Just based on their characters, Jay, it's been repeated a lot, particularly when Jay was not on board with Sammy, that, that was Jimmy's thing, that my brother's a hothead. You know how he is. He's a hothead. So it makes sense that he's not going to push him on something because I think commentary also helped along with this.
Javier, you're saying the opposite. You're saying the opposite, though. I want to clarify this. You're saying Jimmy is a hothead, so shouldn't Jimmy lose his temper and say, Jay, where have you been?
Jay's the hothead. Jimmy's saying that Jay's the hothead, which is why Jay had his issues with Sami Zayn. So from his perspective, because, I mean, he's mentioned that, he's just blowing off steam. You know, he's got to, from his point, they're twins. So they really, they have that close bond. And commentary, actually helped pick up on that because commentary actually said that, Jimmy was sure that his brother wasn't going to leave him hanging up until the last possible moment, which is when he began to doubt, and then that's when, Jay showed up. So, just because they had that relationship, because he had told Roman the week before that he's going to be there. As time got closer, he got more and more nervous, but then that's why when he comes in, and like I mentioned, he's like a weather vane. When Jay shows up, the relief is like, you know what? I don't care where you were. You were here when it mattered. So, that's kind of the, because Jimmy's kind of been portrayed as the one that doesn't think too much. You know what I mean? So,
yeah,
while,
there is that.
While
that's true.
Jimmy, that's Jay. I may be confused. Why did they both have to start with
no,
Jay?
You got it right. You got it right.
Jimmy's going, yeah, okay. So, and then Jay's the one who's, like, introspective and stuff. So, they're all in character. It's a problem with what I find interesting is no one except for Paul Heyman in so far in this part of the story have actually addressed the audience. Because when Sammy was talking, he was talking to Paul Heyman, who just happened to be in the ring. He was not really talking to anybody. No one has really talk to us except for Roman on, Roman saying, let's talk about, you want to talk about something, which by the way, I didn't pick up on it at first, but that's what Cody does. What are we going to talk about?
Yep.
I didn't pick up on that until Monday. What are we talking about? And I realized that Roman had done that. I guess we'll talk about Sami Zayn then, that's an aside, but I've been digging the story minus like that one, like these two things don't meld together. I've been digging a lot of the stuff, still from this. So.
Yeah. I mean, this is just holding things to a higher standard than I think wrestling normally is able to withstand. And it's also, despite what I think are some missing connective tissue from one week to the other and some things feeling rushed and me craving a little bit more, you know, explanation and conversation on certain topics. All that said, it's still really going to work. And I really think they, even if I think there's some a chapter missing, there absolutely is because of the quality of the story and the quality of the acting. Paul Heyman just pitched to Variety that Roman Reigns should be up for an Emmy for his performance. yeah, and I mean, well, Eric, you sighed. Like, that's ridiculous.
Of course it's ridiculous. Come on. It's wrestling. It's at its best, they're like, what is it, high school level acting, junior high level acting, community theater acting? Come on now.
Okay, so here's his quote in Variety. I will honestly state that I'll put Roman Reigns in his portrayal of the Tribal Chief up against anybody right now and how he has approached a reality-based character of the top star of the industry. And the fact that he's not recognized by the people that are there to reward such performances with an award to me is disconcerting. So the article says, as Heyman sees it, Reigns' work since pulls him in the same league as actors like Bryan Cranston and James Gandolfini in that he has crafted a layered, nuanced persona. So, Eric, you scoff. Javier, are you scoffing?
I am not scoffing. I'm not totally 100% on board with that. But I am not scoffing.
I think there's room between scoffing and saying it's ridiculous and going, you know what? If you drop that Roman character into the middle of a program like Succession, his acting is really strong. He's worked hard at that. It's just because there's good acting in a wrestling setting doesn't mean the acting isn't really good. So you can scoff at the Heyman being a pitch man for somebody he respects and likes and is working with by overstating things. But I think there's something to be said for when there's this level of nuance and layering to a character and good acting, which might translate, by the way, to the big screen at some point, just as it has with Batista. And, you know, a few other wrestlers over the years, like a guy named Dwayne Johnson. But Batista's probably doing a better job as an actor, showing more range and all that. You can do that. It's not like just because you're in wrestling, you can't be a talented actor. And Reigns is. He has come so far. And I think very highly of what he's doing. Now, I don't think he should win an Emmy for what he's asked to do, because I don't think what he's asked to do constitutes enough quantity or range. But of what he's asked to do, I think it's really, really top-level acting at this point. I think it's in the context of a pro wrestling setting, and that sounds like a cop-out, but it's like it's a challenge to come across as effective and believable of a character as he is in the time that he's given and the settings he's given. Live mic in the middle of the ring, backstage pre-tape. I'm not going to nominate Roman for an Emmy. I think there's enough other people, Eric, who absolutely deserve it ahead of him. But I don't think it's worth scoffing at like it's this like absurd thing to put out there in the conversation. But go ahead, Javier, and then Eric, you can scoff some more.
Yeah, it was like the legend of Cranston. I mentioned that because I've mentioned I'm not a super huge fan of Breaking Bad. But I mean, I would put him in the same conversation like a CW show.
Do you
know?
Watch Breaking
Bad,
or are you just a fan? We can't have you say you're not a fan of Breaking Bad and let that go. What do you mean?
Yeah, no, I saw it, and I really, really enjoyed the first season. But after the first season, the show just kind of like I liked the descent that we saw up to the first show. But I felt like the show just kept. There was some good stuff later on, but it just felt like it just kept on going forever. So I really did enjoy that first season, but outside of that was, you know.
I moved to remove the witness from the stand due to his obvious lack of credibility on this topic.
I'm removing your jingle for 2 weeks, Javier. You can't say Bryan Cranston in that show, overstate its welcome, and get a jingle. That's terrible.
There was just some stuff that didn't, you know, I thought Esposito, was that his name? Giancarlo Esposito. I thought he was really good in that. It's just that there were parts, essentially there were segments of the show that were done like in 5 episodes, but I think they could have done in like 2 or 3. Some stuff felt like stretched out to me. I'm also a little bit more old school when it comes to, you know, morality.
Well, yeah, I get that.
I do like
my,
You know, so, you know, I do like, you know, heroes and villains, and, you know, I don't, it's a thing where you're basically following what's going on in Breaking Bad, that falls under more guilty pleasure, and like five seasons of a guilty pleasure was, or however many seasons it was, you know, it got a little bit, you know, much, you know, stuff like payoffs, like the brother-in-law, you know, that payoff happened, like, I would have hoped to happen earlier. It's funny. It's just for me, the pacing. And I know it's a personal thing, and I'm in the minority, right. But
yeah,
it is.
Yeah. Yes, you are. Yes, you are. Okay, now move on. You. I'm glad you explained yourself. You're wrong, but that's okay. I'm wrong. It's not
you
subjective.
Know,
you're just objectively. But no, you're fine. I mean, it's not perfect, but my God, it was phenomenal.
You know, and I say it's a value. I did appreciate the craft, and that stuff was top notch. Just the theme was not my.
Javier,
you know.
It's the only prestige TV series, and really the only thing, period, that I have watched start to finish twice. Like every, in part because I wanted my son to experience it. But yeah, it's like the only thing I've watched through twice. And you know, there were like eight, you know, 6 years or whatever in between, but it was me watching the first time and second time, but oh my God, I loved it as much the second time around. But anyway, go ahead.
Yeah.
Now, here's my question. Is Reigns now going to have to go to like Hollywood Reporter? Or I don't know what's Variety's competitor or what would, and go, Paul Heyman should get an Emmy. Paul Heyman's work. And is it going to be the Mutual Admiration Society
that's
going to nominate each other?
Honestly, the one who deserves the Emmy, I think, is Jay. Because the level of subtlety, and he basically sells everything with his face. He doesn't really need to speak. It's just, the emotiveness of his face. And like because you feel the angst that he feels.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So
no,
I think I get that. Yeah.
I get you saying Jay is doing the most subtle job by conveying a lot more with less, you know, less. So I see where you're coming there. And the what Jay did during the pandemic era was, you know, a revelation of nuance in pro wrestling we're not used to. And so that's been fun. Well, there should be a wrestling award that's just simply the best actor. I mean, that's a stage rat in wrestling. You know, that should be a thing. You know, maybe not an Emmy, but let's have the top three or top five results for best acting in the prior calendar year.
Now we are comparing it to TV, which is a different, much more different animal. When we maybe should be comparing it to stage act.
Yeah. I mean, there's some problems with that in a category sense for awards. Because it is on TV and it is, you know, largely scripted and all that. But I know I get what you're saying. It is absolutely, it's different than what is asked of actors in prestige TV series. You got to watch. Yeah.
You are performing in front of an audience. You know, plays have been recorded before. So, you know, I think maybe we should say that he should be up for a Tony. I think we could.
I will.
Me in the middle.
Yeah. I don't know if that's the middle, but anyway.
Well, given how bad the acting is on Broadway, generally speaking, in a musical, not necessarily a drama, you might be onto something. Look, the only debate that should be had here is whether Breaking Bad or The Sopranos is the all-time greatest TV show, right? That's the only debate you'd be having here. And you can call me Golden Boy, Arnold Skyland, or MJF at this point because I am throwing in the towel. You guys are off on something here. First of all, Paul Heyman is one of the all-time biggest BSers and liars in the business, and Wade knows this more than just about anybody on God's green earth. Roman is very wooden by acting standards. He's passable, good, even good some weeks by wrestling standards, but he's a wooden guy delivering soap opera quality lines, and maybe at best he could be a third-tier player on a show like Sons of Anarchy. And that would be that might be a stretch. So I will not suffer this Emmy nonsense any longer. Other than
well, you,
I wonder if Paul Heyman had a straight face when he said it.
Let's settle it with a Twitter poll. We'll ask Twitter. Does he deserve an Emmy nomination? Go ahead, Javier. Yeah.
Eric, I did say that I wouldn't put him with those that level, but I would say that he competes with the CW stuff, which is, you know, would be a third string player in Sons of Anarchy. So, you know, we're not that far apart, so.
Yeah, the acting on the CW is really bad on those shows. That's all about pretty people appealing to young people.
Why are you guys watching the CW? What's going on here? How do you have such knowledge of the acting? I have no idea what the acting quality is on the CW because I don't watch the CW since back on Lester Network.
Superheroes, Flash, got, you know, Flash.
Well, that explains.
Green Arrow, that, you know, so yeah. Back in the day, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, that sort of stuff. Which is definitely melodramatic and over the top. So, what's the award for soaps?
The Daytime Emmy.
The soapies.
I think it's Daytime Emmys.
It is Daytime Emmys. Yeah.
Yeah. So he's right. He should win an Emmy. we're way off.
we gotta have an afternoon edition of SmackDown. All right. Moving on. Driving Eric nuts. He doesn't know how serious we are.
I do think that we saw the birth of a tag team with Liv and Raquel because the tandem finished there at the end with the powerbomb, and it kind of makes sense because Liv so far her character's been that she likes, you know, pain and, like, you know, that sort of stuff, so. I could see them be a team and then basically, you know, be that gimmick team of, who in AEW does that? Eric, you know who I'm talking about? Luther and Serpentico, right? Is that who do
oh,
that?
Yeah. Yeah, the Spanish Announce Project, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I could see them be the, you know, like a similar kind of thing where Liv is a projectile tossed by... tossed by Raquel, and I do think that's going to lead to either a three-way or more likely a three-way because I think they'd want to get damage control on WrestleMania, you know, for the title with Ronda Rousey and Shayna Baszler, which I'm actually looking forward to. I'm looking forward to this pairing because I think that. Shayna Baszler could cover for some of Rousey's deficiencies.
What do you think of Shayna just going, I've been winning titles longer than Ronda, I've been wrestling longer than Ronda, I was fighting in MMA longer than Ronda, and like as a precursor to Ronda and Shayna uniting to beat someone up.
Yeah, I found it a little bit weird. I mean, I it was coming off of the heels of the Natalya thing, and I was already rolling my eyes at that, so I was almost unconscious. But yeah, when she came out and she started, you know, going into that, I'm like, well, everything so far had been like they looked like they were setting up something because they'd been hanging out in the back, they'd been, you know, being bullies in the back, they being Rousey and Baszler before Rousey lost her title, so it looked like they were, you know. It looked like they were building together. So when she started going into that, I'm like, are they working for a feud between Baszler and Rousey? But I should have my swerve guard's been down for some reason. they did get me with the swerve, and then I was just at that point I was just rolling my eyes because I was like, oh, you know, so all the stuff that she said was to, you know, just a swerve for the audience because it served no purpose. Like, it wasn't, like, to keep, you know, get Natalya off guard or whatever. It was just to sort of the audience, so I wasn't too big of a fan of that. But, you know, ultimately, that together, I do like.
Yeah. Yeah. Eric, anything on that?
It was just a swerve, I think.
Okay. I'm skeptical it was just a swerve, but I think Shayna would tell Ronda, I was just swerving him. But deep down, she wanted that in the public record, people to be reminded of it.
Oh,
that's
I think
my,
psychoanalysis. It might be real.
I could see that. So, I could imagine, you know, Ronda being prickly enough to.
So, you know, but yeah, I think that's pretty much what I mainly had because all my notes were about the Jimmy and Jay thing.
Yeah, no, good. Well, I was looking forward to talking about it. I got an email here. This is not an A topic, but I want to get your thoughts on it. Grant emailed and said, so with the way that Karrion Kross lost to Rey a few weeks back and being unceremoniously eliminated from the Rumble, and now tonight not even being factored into the finish of the match, do you feel like WWE has soured on Karrion Kross as much as you have been soured on him in the past? I don't think so, but I don't think he's fast-tracked. You know, I don't think they're fast-tracking him to being Cody's next challenger or something like that, you know, this summer. But I think they're protecting him a little bit, but they're because he didn't take the fall. He's getting, you know, vignettes in that. But yeah, I mean, I think he's being slotted the way he should be, which is not being buried. I think he's better than he was when he was, you know, just making cartoon Starly Haunted House villain faces. I think he's shown range, and I think in the ring he's been better. So I don't sense he's being buried, and I don't think that evidence. I mean, the unceremonious dump from the Rumble, I mean, sometimes it's just sending a message or it's setting something up for later. It's not necessarily being buried. It's just kind of what happened. So I don't know. Eric, what do you think of Karrion Kross?
I try not to. He's just not – he's not WWE level. It should all work, right? He's got a – you know, his wife is a great – valet addition to the act, like a throwback, you know, late 90s Sable type, except, you know, with more mystique and a little bit more clothing. Not much, but mm-hmm. enough. And Karrion should work. He's, you know, a heel. He can throw people around, and just there's something missing, and I don't know what it is, but I think everybody, you know, everybody sees that something's missing, even if you can't
taking bumps?
Articulate what it is. Yeah, selling might not be his strong point, but, you know, lots of guys have made money by not selling. Braun Strowman isn't exactly taking bumps and selling, and he seems to be relatively over. And
he's also a foot taller than Kross, not quite.
Yeah,
but,
yeah. So, you know, I'm, you know, Vince is back. And they were literally making fun of Hit Row in the opening match, just, yeah. you know, completely mocking the heck out of them. I mean, Michael Cole even said something like, Wade Barrett said, no, there's no top dollar, didn't even get into the match. And Cole said they would have lost even quicker.
Oh, my God.
And I'm like, Michael Cole. Throwing shade. I assume he's instructed to do that and isn't doing it of his own accord. And so, like, you know, Karrion Kross, not, you know, his push seems to have stalled and top dollar being Hit Row being made fun of. Vince is back and or Paul is Levesque is disappointed in what those people have brought to the table when he stuck his neck out to re-sign them. So those are my thoughts on Mr. Kross.
Yeah, I mean, there was the issue of, do I have to temper Kross's push because Vince will notice he's here when he didn't, you know, didn't want him here. Javier, what do you think?
Yeah, in terms of Top Dollar, that's kind of been a recurring thing since Top Dollar botched his dive to the outside. Cole has been, playing into that, making fun of Top Dollar every time he's been on the thing, and Top Dollar's, you know, been pushing back whenever he hears it, and Wade's like, oh, he's going to kick your ass, and I think ultimately they might end up doing something along the lines, or, you know, but that's kind of been a gimmick.
Wow.
So, in terms of, like, you know, Top Dollar just, you know, grabbing him and throttling him or something.
I want a match. I want a WrestleMania match.
Well, that's
a dive.
Bailey
you can only win with a dive through the ropes.
Well, okay, somewhere Bailey said that she wants to wrestle. She wants to end Michael Cole's undefeated WrestleMania streak. That's
triple
the dream
threat
match for this WrestleMania. So.
Triple threat. Top Dollar, Bailey,
triple
Cole.
Threat,
we got
yeah.
a WrestleMania. Yeah, special attraction yeah. match. No rules. It's no DQ because when you add a wrestler to a match, there can be no rules. That's what. Don't even try to explain it to me.
Sorry?
Javier, don't even rationalize it. Don't even try. It's dumb. You don't. It's a fatal four-way match, and now there's no rules. That's stupid. Stop it, WWE.
Special referee McAfee. There you have it.
Would that be objective?
But,
I think Cole would be guaranteed to win.
I think there was a cross question in there. I think he's in the spot where he's supposed to be. He's not being buried. I mean, you can ignore the Rumble thing because I believe Ray was most likely the one who would eliminate him during that because of the feud. But Ray was, from what I heard, was legit hurt and wasn't cleared for the Rumble, which is why they did the whole Dominic took him out in the back. And then the loss that followed up was a slip on a banana peel loss just to, you know, to further anger him for when he comes after after Ray, and to give Ray a victory that doesn't really mean anything because, you know, Cross is bigger than him. So ultimately, it's not like he's going to be like wrestling for the Intercontinental or the championship anytime soon anyway. But I would put him like third tier, you know, in the third tier from the top. The ones that would be just underneath the Intercontinental and USA and US title belt people, which is fine, you know, for now. So,
all right, very good. Anything else you want to add, Eric, about SmackDown while we have Javier here?
I think, like Brian Cage, I have gotten all my stuff in.
I love it. Javier, sounds like you're done too.
I thought I was kind of surprised that we didn't get any sort of follow-up or anything from Bray Wyatt. So outside, you know, instead we got follow-up from LA Knight.
Yeah, that was weird where LA Knight's like, I don't want to talk about that anymore. I love that they still is that soda brand still paying for their name to be mentioned every time the match is mentioned? Like, can't we just call it Pitch Black now and leave the sponsorship out? Or are they going to say, oh, and then we had Michael Cole say that Jey Uso came down to the ring through the WWE Universe. He hasn't done that in a while, and he did it. And I was like, man, is Vince back on headsets tonight?
Well, the Pitch Black is part of the sponsorship. It's actually the name of the subtitle of the soda. So it's actually a sub-trademark of theirs.
So they can't say the Pitch Black match without saying the name of the soda?
Illegally?
Like, that's
Pitch Black.
The thing?
I'm saying that it's Mountain Dew Pitch Black. You know, so, and then, like, is the bit that's the whole, you know. So whenever you hear a Pitch Black match now, you're always going to remember that match. It's kind of like Xerox. We say we're going to Xerox something, even though Xerox is the name of the brand and not, you know. So that's been, you know, so I mean, good money well spent. I forgot who Mountain Dew's parent company was. But, you know, money well spent for them.
Yeah. We made it almost through the conversation without saying Mountain Dew. Thanks, Javier. We gave him free publicity.
No.
But we're trying to.
I'm sorry. But we're talking negatively about them.
That's true. Well, what would the Mellow Yellow stipulation match be? That we can answer that question next week. Who would be Mellow? Who's chill? Riddle. Riddle would be part of Mellow Yellow. He's chill. He's Mellow. But it's caffeinated, so it's ironic. I don't know. Anyway, anything else, Eric?
Well, I mean.
No, you already asked
me about
that. Anything else, Javier?
If you want to talk about irony, I actually bought some so that we actually jokingly ironically drank it during the actual match.
Oh man, how was
making fun of it? So it's not bad. I mean, I do. I mean, I like Mountain Dew's alternate flavors. The problem is living in Hialeah, they stock it once and then never again. So I literally have to go to like every store within like 20 miles and buy them all. Because I do like the different flavors and stuff. They carry them, but they don't carry the zero or the diet versions. They only carry the sugar one. So.
Okay, that was more information than I wanted, Javier.
Yeah, no, I'm more. I mean, you know, I got long winded. So.
Thanks, Javier. It's been fun.
Have a good one.
Appreciate
good
it. Sincerely, yeah. Take a good weekend, Eric. Thank you. How do you think your foray into WWE analysis went?
I think it went okay. I did my best. I had pages of notes and feel like I was following the product
lately.
Often just through recaps and YouTube clips. But SmackDown, you know, more fast forwarding through the good parts paid off. So
yeah, no, I like it.
Glad I could be of service and pinch hit here at the last second.
Yeah, and I mean we've had a fun week as far as that goes. It wasn't I should say it was by design, but it That would be a lie. But we did have Kelly Wells from NXT, who primarily covers NXT on the AEW post show. We had Darren Lilly, who primarily covers Impact on the Raw post show. And we've got you, who is primarily a co-host in rotation on the AEW Dynamite post show. So it is fun to get different people in the mix who are – well, Darren follows WWE really close, and Kelly has, unlike Tom Stout, followed AEW. You are newer to following WWE. But I really like that perspective. I mean, I think it's valuable and to have someone who likes the AEW product better than WWE and admits it on a WWE post show and evaluate the show and not hold it to a different standard, but have different things that you look for and you know, just acknowledge, hey, this worked, this did. Here's something that I like better about AEW, and here's something that surprised me about, you know, that's pulled me in with WWE, and you know, whatever. When we do this, and we have people on who cover different beats, I think it adds a different twist to the analysis, and I think that worked tonight too.
Well, good. I think if I could make two changes to SmackDown, it would be to take away the omnipresent sound sweetening. Absolutely insane. And they don't always need it when they have a hot angle. Yeah. And then I think there were 35 minutes of wrestling in a 2-hour show, and 6 of the minutes came during commercial break. So really you only got to see 29 minutes of wrestling. So I'm used to, obviously, with Dynamite, a little bit of ratio in the other direction. So,
very much this week.
No recaps,
this week.
No talking, just bell-to-bell action for 2 hours. So,
yes.
Maybe a little bit more of a balance for WWE would be good. I know they have been, right, since Paul took over.
Yeah, they went a little too far for a while, actually.
Yeah. Too long, matches being long, yeah.
Yeah. It felt like, I don't have time to book this show, so let's just fill it with longer matches and see how it goes. But, you know, that is not what the WWE audience tunes in for. You know, if it's a big match every month on a paper, you know, big lineup of matches and it feels big, that's different. But, you know, the weekly TV shows, like, you can have one or two, but some of them, he was pushing it some weeks.
Yeah, every match doesn't need to be 15 to 18 minutes on any wrestling show. So.
Yeah. Cool. Thanks, Eric. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Wade.
Yeah, you bet. Thanks, everyone, for listening, and we'll talk to you all next time.